I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 8th of October already. We are in our fall membership drive. One of you listening just heard that for the very first time, and your support, as you probably know, is really the foundation of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your place to tune in for really great programs. And we'll be with our guest with a very important topic in just one moment. Lisa Nalbandian is with me to encourage you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 right at this very moment to make your gift in support of all of these programs that you count on. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, and thank you to everyone who made a gift last hour.
Oh, it was
hour.
A great hour.
It was
thank
a great
you.
Hour. Yeah. We heard from 39 new and returning listeners. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And this is the last hour to pledge this drive for the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we need to get to 40 pledges by the end of the hour. We talk about these hourly goals because they help us stay on track for the entire drive, and that simply keeps all these good programs on the air. You pledge to keep these great conversations on the air, but just this drive, there's another great reason to make your gift. I've talked about this quite a bit. Your donation during this drive enters you in a drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. So take a moment right now, right before the show starts, and support the programs and get entered in that drawing with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And just a reminder, it's the last hour that you can pledge a gift to this particular program, which would be very nice for us to go out on a really good note, a happy note. We all crave meaning and substance, and it's why you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. We really do cover so many important topics. The one we just did on happiness, we're going to be talking about Afghanistan in just a moment. All of the political conversations. If you listen to this station regularly, you know Wisconsin politics and national politics like nobody else. Plus, you've got a whole library because you've read so much. This substance only possible with your support, quite frankly. So make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have a really great thank you gift during this drive. It's a brand new WPR water bottle, and that's for a pledge of $12.50 a month or $150 or more. Make the donation to support all the programs you count on every single day and get this great water bottle. You can see it at WPR.org, and make sure to ask for your now when you pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
This membership drive, we're having a drawing for a trip of your choice to South Africa, Cuba, or Canada. When you give, you're automatically entered, but you don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to WPR Trip Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending a postcard, or better yet, by making a pledge right now.
Make your pledge in support of all of these programs at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we're asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. This is our fall membership drive. You might think of $5 a month. You might be able to think of $100 a month. We thank you for all of your gifts.
You know that the programs you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio make a difference in your life. You're listening right now, and you probably listen every day. When you pledge during this drive, you put your money where your values are and kind of, you know. So each year, listeners give what they can to support WPR. Thank you so much if you're already a member for making Wisconsin Public Radio possible. If you're not a member yet, hey, guess what? Today's the day to become one.
Absolutely.
Join right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This radio station is something we've all created together. The programs also have an impact all over the state and beyond the state as well. When you make your gift, WPR.org, 888-202-2552, you're really participating in something that is our creation. So give now and be part of this news and talk that makes this such an incredibly valuable station.
You may have donated a few years back and feel like you've paid your dues, but you listen to WPR year after year after year. It's your annual or monthly gift that keeps us meaningful to you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's been a while since you've donated, this is the ideal time to give again. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'll be so happy to have you back.
We will be happy. Happiness is
right.
The theme of this day. We have 33 pledges to go, Lisa, during the course of this hour, and we have about 50 minutes to get them, so we're hopeful that we will be able to do that. It's your gift at WPR.org, 888-202-2552, that will allow us to get there. And remember, the drawing for the two tickets on the WPR trip, Canadian Rockies, Cuba, and South Africa, and sustainers, you are already automatically entered.
You know, Renee from Racine says, love listening all day long. Kathleen's done 1 to 3 time slot is always wonderful, informative and educational. Can't say enough about my friend WPR. Thanks for all the great programming. Thank you so much, Renee. Join Renee and join Peggy from Algoma, who says, love WPR. Keep up the great work. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you for all of your pledges. We really deeply appreciate them. And actually, I hope you know how important it is that you pledge, because it is 40% of our budget. People don't realize how we get money, and 40% is huge, Lisa.
Listeners are number one.
Right.
They're the number one source of our funding.
Yeah, so that means that it's important to give.
Right. Right now. WPR.org.
Right now, this very moment, WPR.org, 888-202-2552 is the way to do it. It's our last hour for this show to ask for your support, so I hope you will come through for us, particularly for KP and Scotty, who work so hard to bring you all of these phenomenal shows. I mean, think about all these phenomenal shows. We have a difficult topic to talk about the next part of the program, but it is nonetheless an important topic. The question of the hour is the Kunduz hospital strike by U.S. forces over the weekend a war crime? Our guest will be Professor Lori Blank. She is a clinical professor of law at Emory University, whose special areas are international humanitarian law, law of armed conflict, international criminal law, and national security law. And we will meet her in just one moment. We thought we would hear some different takes on this question, which is going to be discussed for quite some time. This was a meeting before a committee in Congress, and it's General Campbell who is giving a response to an apology and a response to how this happened.
To be clear, the decision to provide aerial fires was a U.S. decision made within the U.S. chain of command. A hospital was mistakenly struck. We would never intentionally target a protected medical facility. In closing, the challenges before us are still significant. An extremely tough fight the Afghan security forces continue to hold. They've remained resilient, and they haven't fractured. Fully supported and led by an engaged Commander-in-Chief, President Ghani, embraced by the Afghan people, and backstopped by our military advisors, resources, and enablers, the Afghan security forces' future and Afghanistan's prospects for eventual peace still remain promising.
And this is Senator, that was actually General Campbell telling a Senate committee on Tuesday that the strike was the result of a U.S. decision made within the U.S. chain of command. U.S. Senator John McCain told National Public Radio on Monday morning that it is ludicrous to think of this airstrike as a war crime.
This tragedy, and it's a terrible tragedy, would not have occurred if the Taliban had not attacked the place to start with. And so I find it ludicrous and insulting that people would say, because of this terrible accident, that somehow the war crimes are committed. To call that a war crime distorts the definition of a war crime.
A very different point of view from the international president of Doctors Without Borders. In a speech after the bombing, the president, Dr. Joanne Liu, called the airstrike a violation of the Geneva Conventions and has called for an investigation separate from a U.S., NATO, or Afghan investigation. She is calling for an independent investigation.
The U.S. attack on the MSF hospital in Kunduz was the biggest loss of life for our organization in an airstrike. Tens of thousands of people in Kunduz can no longer receive medical care now when they need it the most. Today, we say enough. Even war has rules. This was not just an attack on our hospital. It was an attack on the Geneva Conventions. This cannot be tolerated. These conventions govern the rules of war and were established to protect civilians in conflicts, including patients, medical workers, and facilities. They bring some humanity into what is otherwise an inhuman situation. The Geneva Conventions are not just an abstract legal framework. They are the difference between life and death for the medical teams on the front line. They are what allow patients to access our health facilities safely and what allow us to provide health care without being targeted.
Professor Lori Blank is our guest now, clinical professor of law at Emory University, co-author of International Law and Armed Conflict, Fundamental Principles and Contemporary Challenges in the Law of War. She's also co-director of a project on military training programs in the law of war. And before coming to Emory, she was a program officer in the Rule of Law program at the United States Institute of Peace. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Blank. Our phone number is 800-486-8655 for you to join this important conversation. Professor Lori Blank, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So is the Kunduz hospital strike by the U.S. forces a war crime?
Well, that's not as simple a question as it seems. I think that it's important to hear what everybody is saying in those clips that you mentioned. And I think the president of Médecins Sans Frontières gave a wonderful description of why we have law in war and why we have the Geneva Conventions. And indeed, everything she said about the purposes of the law is very true and very important. And if we start from that point, that doesn't necessarily take us to the conclusion that this was a war crime. And that's where it's important to understand how the law works and what its purposes are, and also how the criminal accountability portion of the law works. And in order to understand that, we need a whole lot more information than we have right now. And that's really the point of the investigations and the examinations of what went on. That's why we need to have that information, because we can't really make that kind of statement without knowing more, mm-hmm, based on how the law works.
You have written about hospitals enjoying special protection under the law. They are immune from attack, and there is some question about whether or not this hospital was used for military activities. Is that the only reason that they could be struck, is when they are possibly being used for military activities, and what kind of proof is needed in that regard?
So that's correct. Hospitals are specially protected from attack. The law generally distinguishes between people who are fighting and people who are not, between military objects, things that are used for military purposes, and civilian objects, just things that we're using in our everyday life that have no military engagement in the conflict. And then certain objects have special protection, hospitals, religious and cultural property, and that's because of their special added value to the community, to the continued existence of the civilian population, both during the conflict and afterwards. And so hospitals fall into that category of special protection. That special protection means not only can they not be attacked as a general rule, all civilian objects are protected from attack. That's essential to the protection of the civilian population in general. Hospitals have an additional layer of protection, which is that they can't be used for military activities, meaning one side of the conflict can't park their rocket launchers on the hospital roof, use it as a headquarters, a command and control post, station their fighters in the windows and fire rockets from the hospital. Doing that in and of itself, while it's not attacking the hospital, that's using it for military purposes. That in and of itself is a violation of the law. It's violating the hospital's sanctity and protection under the law.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that additional layer of protection. Now, the law is not, all of these protections are not absolute. If a hospital is being used in such a manner for military purposes, it will lose its immunity from attack and therefore could be open subject to attack because it's now being used as a military facility in essence.
I'm wondering about the people inside the hospital. There have been reports that Afghan security officials have been troubled for some time that Doctors Without Borders would be treating not only doctors and people from, that they would be treating people from both sides of the conflict. So there may have been injured Taliban inside the hospital, and the Afghani security forces have been very upset about that. And reports are that they came in sometime in July and were kind of nasty to members of the staff, confronting them on that very issue. How do the laws of war, what do they say about treating the enemy inside a hospital?
The law is crystal clear that medical facilities, doctors, all medical personnel have to treat injured and wounded based on medical need only. There can be no discrimination in medical care based on which side you're on, which team you're fighting for. And so, in fact, it's an obligation under the law to treat all sides equally with regard to medical care and to act solely on the basis of medical need. And you see this happening in lots of conflicts where one side will have wounded personnel come in, and some of those wounded personnel are the very people who attacked their own soldiers just a short time ago, but they treat them because as soon as they're wounded, now they fall into the category of wounded people who are specially protected under the law as well. And so there can be no confusion that the fact that this hospital may have been treating injured Taliban, and I assume it was and it should be because if they're wounded, they need medical treatment and they're entitled to it, that in no circumstances changes in any way the status of the hospital or its protection. That said, there's also nothing that prevents Afghan security from coming into the hospital and looking for, to see what's going on, looking to see if it's being used for medical purpose, if there's anything going on. They're entitled to go in, talk to the people, look around. That's different from attacking it.
Mm-hmm. Who should most objectively be carrying out an investigation of this? You have said that NATO, the U.S., and the Afghan forces can do this. Doctors Without Borders is saying, no way, we need an independent body.
Well, I think there's no doubt that there's going to be a difference of perspective in terms of who thinks what type of investigation is going to do the right job here. When we look at it from the perspective of the law doesn't make any comment about who should be carrying out an investigation here. So it's absolutely appropriate on a number of levels for the U.S. to go ahead and carry out an investigation itself. First of all, there's no evidence that I've seen that the U.S. can't do this, either as a matter of capability or as a matter of impartiality and appropriateness. They've done this many, many times and proven to be quite capable and efficient and fair in examining what has gone on in other incidents. And from the perspective of the operation of the U.S. military and future conduct of hostilities, it's critically important that they investigate themselves in order to understand what happened. How did this come about?
Right, right.
What do we need to think about as we train and implement and execute operations going forward. So for me to suggest that they shouldn't, that they're barred from investigating for some reason, is missing a big piece of the puzzle. Afghanistan, of course, has a right to investigate. It's happening in their country. I don't think there's any obligation that this be an independent or international investigation. I see no problem with MSF calling for that. I understand why they are, but I don't see any legal basis for an insistence on that.
Professor Lori Blank, clinical professor of law at Emory University, is our guest this hour. The question of the hour is the Kunduz hospital strike by U.S. forces a war crime? Who should be investigating? What needs to be considered? She knows the law here in international humanitarian law and the law of armed conflict. What do you think about who needs to investigate this? What about all the different reports that came out initially about what this was? Do you feel that the bodies like NATO and the U.S. and Afghan people can get to the bottom of this, or is there an independent investigation that needs to take place? Were you horrified by what you heard? Our phone number, and we'd love to take your phone calls pretty soon, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and this is our fall membership drive. Listeners, you know, provide the single largest source of funding here at WPR, and this drive is your chance to support all the programs that you enjoy, and there are many. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
This is your chance to help pay for all the programs you depend on all year long, and we're looking for 22 more pledges by the end of the hour. And remember, when you give whatever the amount, you'll be entered in a drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip of your choice. And these trips are incredible. You could go to Cuba. You could explore South Africa. You could take a train trip in the Canadian Rockies. Make your donation right now. You'll support all of your favorite programs and get entered in that drawing. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We love doing this show. I must say that KP Whaley and Scotty Myers are true pleasures to work with. We have a wonderful audience, and I love taking your calls, which we will momentarily on this Afghan airstrike that hit the hospital. It was a horrible occurrence, and I'm wondering what you're thinking about this. We wonder what you think about a lot of things, and you're smart, and you follow what's going on, and we love your participation in this program. You don't really get a show like this on other stations, and it's possible, pledge by pledge, only on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Please give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
By giving to WPR right now, you support the Kathleen Dunn Show that brings you these really in-depth, meaningful conversations that you just don't get anywhere else, and that in turn just supports the community that you live in. So pledge right now. And to thank you for that pledge, we have something really special during this fall membership drive. And remember to ask for the WPR water bottle, and that's for a gift of $12.50 a month or $150 or more a year. It's 27 ounces, it's stainless steel, and has a very modern and clean WPR design on it. Plus, you can choose between two different colors. So ask for the water bottle when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Please remember, your support is the single largest source of our income.
I've been a public radio listener for as long as it's been around. It's a long time. Public radio, for me, is pretty much the only kind of radio that I would choose to listen to. My name is Penny, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for programming I can't get anywhere else.
Thank you, Penny. Pledge now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Your gift might be $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount. It's okay. It's good, and we thank you a lot.
That's right. And there are so many ways to listen to WPR. Of course, on the radio, you can listen in the car when you are at home or when you're at work. And thinking beyond radio now, you can listen online at WPR.org or with the WPR app. Wisconsin Public Radio is in your life, no matter what you're doing or where you're doing it. So pledge now to support this access to great, great radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I don't know if you know that 18,000 WPR members are sustaining members. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. And they, as you know, provide a pretty steady and reliable stream of funding for us. You can join their ranks by choosing a monthly giving amount, maybe $10 a month, and then you just set it up on an ongoing basis. It's a great way to support this station. Become a sustainer right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Maybe a dollar a day is the right amount for you to give to Wisconsin Public Radio, which is a pretty good deal when you think about it. It's less than a cup of coffee or a bottle of soda, or way less than a day of cell phone service.
Yes.
So a dollar a day comes out to about $30 a month, and you can set that up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or credit card. So make your pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
22 more pledges to go. This is an important topic. We talk about big issue topics all the time on this program, and it's good that we do and important that we do. This is my last hour to ask for your support for our show. And remember, as an added bonus, you will be entered in the drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip, and sustainers, you are automatically entered.
That's right. Rachel from Madison says, my son was listening to the radio and said, are you going to pledge? I love radio.
Aww.
You should do that.
And Rachel said, okay, son,
yeah.
I'll do that.
Yeah. So let's all listen to Rachel's son here and go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make your pledge.
Yeah, as the moms of sons, it's good when we listen to our sons, right?
I think so. That's what I'm learning.
I know. They can give us good advice. Again, it's your gift is important, very important. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Lisa, very much. And our guest is Professor Lori Blank. She's a clinical professor of law at Emory University. She knows the law of armed conflict, international humanitarian law, and we're looking at the Kunduz hospital strike by U.S. forces and asking, is this a war crime? And welcoming your phone calls, and we have many of them coming in. 800-486-8655 is our number. Richard in Fort Atkinson is our first caller for you. Hi, Richard.
Hi, thank you. There's a contrary argument to the one made by your guest about the investigation. The investigation is not only for the facts. The investigation is also to determine reliability and liability. And consequently, to have an investigation conducted by the participating parties is a conflict of interest. And I just don't think you can sustain that. The position that the United States government or the Afghanis should be the ones conducting this investigation. If one has faith in the ability of the United States to do this honestly and reliably, I think that is absurd. All one has to do is to remember me lie.
Mm. Well, he makes an interesting point, Professor Blank.
Yes, no, I think it's certainly understandable to have concerns about the progress of an investigation, although we have many instances of the U.S. investigating and other countries investigating incidents by their militaries, and that is part of the military justice system. It's integral, really, to the military justice system that the military be able to investigate itself. That doesn't preclude others from investigating what happened at all. It's not a zero-sum game or a one-player game in any way. But in order for the military to impose discipline and to implement the law, train on the law effectively, execute the law, and hold those responsible who violate the law, they have to be able to investigate because it's part of that entire system. And they have to be able to prosecute because that's how they can ensure that they are fulfilling their obligations under the law. Both U.S. domestic law and international law require that there be a system of discipline and justice within the military. And so the U.S. is fulfilling its obligations in that way by doing so.
The other thing that has put some questions in a lot of people's minds about this are the news reports that came out initially. So first, it's, you know, this is just a huge mistake, and it may have resulted, I hate this word, collateral damage to a nearby medical facility. And then it's, oh, you know, the Afghans wanted us, there was Taliban activity here, and they wanted us to come in and do something. And then the people in the hospital said there was no Taliban activity here at all. And then we say, oh, we did make a mistake. We did bomb it. And it takes forever to get at what may be the truth and may not be, because you haven't been given the truth right off the bat.
Well, I think on some level, it's important to realize that this information is complicated. In order to figure out exactly what was happening from multiple different perspectives in the course of combat in a populated area with many different things going on at the same time, many different actors who have different perspectives on what's going on, it's really impossible that at that moment, an hour later, even a day later, that we can have all the information. That's the reason to have an investigation. So I think rather than criticizing changing stories, I think another way to look at the steadily evolving pieces of information that are coming out is that we are being provided information by different parties involved here, MSF, the Afghan security forces, the U.S. military, and others, as it's becoming available. On some level, that in and of itself is pretty remarkable, because you can envision a different scenario in which nobody says anything until they've gotten their story straightened with somebody else and they want to figure out what the ramifications might be. So I think it's a little premature to start saying, well, we're getting shifting information, so clearly there's games being played in trying to present the information. I think what we're seeing is actually the operation of the complexity of combat and the complexity of conflict and the multiple moving parts when you have many different parties involved and coalitions operating together and trying to figure out which is the right information, which information can be shared because it's available to be released to the public. How do we get other information? Who do we need to talk to? And we'll see as more information comes out and investigation is carried out that some of the information that came out right away is completely thrown out because it was wrong. It was thought to be the right information, but it was wrong, and that's why you need to have an investigation.
Yeah. There might be something else at play here because, for heaven's sake, it was a hospital that was bombed, and doctors who were doing this wonderful work were killed, and patients were killed. And you listen to the doctors inside the hospital, don't you, who are saying, listen, there weren't any Taliban here. We gave them the coordinates of where this hospital was just a few days before. We were talking to these people while they were bombing and saying, hey, you're bombing a hospital. Stop what you're doing. And they kept bombing the hospital for another 30 minutes. There's something about, why would they lie about this? They're putting their lives at risk in a hospital setting, for heaven's sake.
Well, I don't think that, as I read the reports, I don't have the impression that anybody is lying. I have the impression that we're getting information from a lot of varied sources. And that's the purpose of an investigation. Now, there's no doubt that this is just an impossible tragedy.
Yes.
I mean, it's so hard to read the news about it, to see the footage. It's terrible. There are really, I mean, we can say it's tragic, we can say it's terrible. These words don't encompass what happened. There's no doubt. But the way the law works is that we have to actually know what was understood at the time of the attack. If we could simply look at it now, 3 days later, and just say, well, this is what happened, based on photographs and news reports, it might be easier, but that's not how the law works. What the law says is we have to understand what was being targeted, what was intended to be targeted.
Yes.
And then was the intended target something lawful as a military target in the course of combat?
Yeah.
If it was not, then we have to proceed on that question. Why? Mm-hmm. Like, and find out why, right? Okay, if the intended target was not a lawful target, was that deliberate? Then you have a problem.
Right.
Was that a mistake? How could this mistake have happened? Was it reckless? Was it many different things? Or was the intended target something that is lawful? Now, how did this damage happen? How did the strikes hitting the hospital happen? Was it because certain precautions weren't taken? Was it because precautions were taken, everything was done as correctly as it could have, and horrible things went wrong? So one of the things that's hard to understand when we sit outside the combat environment is that, especially when as Americans, we envision precision-guided munitions and all the incredible capability and technology that we hear about and that we see, is that it doesn't always go according to plan. Things don't always happen the way they are supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can look at this information and I can envision a multiplicity of ways that this played out. I just don't know which one is actually the truth. And what the law tells us is we need to know what the commander, the person ordering the strike, the person actually carrying out the strike, what did they know?
Right, exactly.
At the time, what did they intend? What should they have known?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, did they simply close their eyes and not consider that this was a hospital? I mean, that's probably unlikely, but right, you have to take into account what they should have known. What information do they need to gather about what's happening in the area, about the likely effect of the weapons that they're choosing to use, about what the enemy is doing in that area, about who they're responding to? Until we know that, we only have a part of the picture. Now, it may be that that gets found out through an investigation, and, you know, you can go in multiple directions in terms of that. They didn't do a very good job. Okay, now they didn't follow the rules. Now you have a certain conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to more phone calls, just because our time is limited and we have a lot of people calling in on this. Scott in La Crosse is next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
First, before I ask my question, I'll briefly like to say that programs like this are really a very strong reason why I'm proud to be a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
Now, my question is, and this is maybe sounds a little nitpicky, but I always tell people, I believe in UFOs, because UFO just means unidentified flying object. So it's pretty straightforward. Well, so my question is, as far as I recall, the United States has not been at war since 1945. So the question is, when is a war crime a war crime, and when is a crime, and when is it just a crime? And of course, obviously, I think the people that the United States is fighting in this conflict are even on even shakier grounds, as that turns out, because, you know, in spite of them calling themselves the Islamic State, they don't even seem to be a country.
So that's a great question, because we talk about war, we talk about the law of war, but you're right. We don't use war in the legal sense anymore, and we now talk about armed conflict. And so the fact that we are not declaring war against the Taliban or another group is really a political issue as opposed to a legal issue. So the question from the law's perspective here is there an armed conflict going on? And there's a specific way to define that. And the reason we don't use war anymore is because countries were able to manipulate the term and say, well, we're not at war, we don't have to follow the rules. So when the Geneva Conventions were signed in 1949, they eliminated the word war as a legal term. And so the question is what's going on in Afghanistan an armed conflict as understood in the law to trigger this body of law? And it is. I mean, it has been since 2001, when the U.S. began bombing in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. And once you are in an armed conflict, then violations of the law of armed conflict, the law of war, same thing, are going to be called war crimes. The serious violations of that law are war crimes. So that's how that plays out in terms of the use of the word war and war crime. It's a lot of different changes in the language, but
Thank you, Scott, very much. We always appreciate your phone calls. Professor Lori Blank is our guest, clinical professor of law at Emory University. Her special interests and expertise, international humanitarian law and law of armed conflict. We're talking about the U.S. Strike on the Doctors Without Borders Hospital in Kunduz, and asking whether or not it was a war crime, and what questions need to be asked and answers given in order to determine that. And we're taking phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. I also want to remind you that we are in our fall membership drive, and this is my last, 10 or so minutes during this drive to ask for your support of this program. It's an important conversation, and we have these on a regular basis. So for your support, WPR.org, go there or go to 888-202-2552. Sarah in Janesville, our next caller. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah.
So I've just been hearing the word accident come up over and over again as, you've been discussing this. And I agree with you, Kathleen, that the term collateral damage is just ridiculous. So my question, I guess, is does this really matter whether or not this was an accident? And if it turns out after this investigation, whoever ends up conducting it and saying, yes, it was an accident, terrible accident with a, obviously tragic consequences, are they going to be reprimanded for this anyways? Because it doesn't matter whether it was an accident or not. The truth is that people were killed and people died. And there should be consequences for this type of action. If you're driving your car down the street and you hit someone, you're prosecuted for involuntary manslaughter, whether it was an accident or not. So, not to compare, a catastrophic event like this to hitting someone with your car, but, it seems kind of a moot point whether it was an accident or not.
Sarah, thank you.
Professor. Well, I don't think it's necessarily a moot point, although I think you do raise a great question, which is, what do we do after we find out, say we can find out all the information? What do we do with that? So there's a couple of layers here. If indeed the law was violated in some way, then those who are responsible need to be further investigated, prosecuted, and held responsible if that can be proved. And in addition, measures need to be taken in order to try to prevent that from happening again, right? It's not just about those responsible in a particular situation. It's trying to improve the implementation of the law and the training and everything to try to keep this kind of thing from happening again. Now, if it turns out that there was no violation of the law, which means what was done, you want to call it an accident, a mistake, whatever term someone might be comfortable with. But if nobody violated the law, well, there are, as you said, there are, in fact, still consequences. People are killed, mm-hmm. injured, property is destroyed, and there are ramifications. So often we will see, even in the absence of criminal responsibility or other liability, the party whose action caused these consequences will pay amends of some kind to try to respond in some way. And in addition, there will absolutely be a need for additional measures taken to try to keep this from happening again, training and other steps to help ensure that this doesn't happen again, even if there is no evidence that shows that somebody committed a crime. Because you can, one of the things about war that's very difficult, I think, to understand is that terrible, terrible things happen.
Right.
And it's not necessarily because somebody was acting criminally. I mean, it's a terrible thing about war that it's a bad state
it's
of affairs.
It's a terrible thing. Right.
I mean, it's terrible across the board. That doesn't mean that someone has been criminal in their conduct.
Yeah.
Two different levels of analysis.
Professor Lori Blank, and we thank you so much for being with us. Attempting to answer, is the Kunduz hospital strike by U.S. forces a war crime, the strike on Doctors Without Borders Hospital? We will take on this issue probably again next week and look at the broader issue. We've been in Afghanistan for 14 years now. Isn't that incredible? 14 years. And you heard the general earlier in his clip before a Senate committee saying, yeah, you know, things are looking, you know, we're hopeful. Things are looking pretty good. There's a possibility that things are going well. 14 years. What is going on in that country after all of these years? We'll ask that question, and we'll certainly do that on a show next week here on the Kathleen Dunn Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and this is our fall membership drive. I'm in my last few minutes of asking for your support for this program. You rely on us for these kinds of conversations. They're not always easy. They're very important. And we rely on you to keep these kinds of conversations on the air. Your gift right now, whatever you want to give, is important. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As we wrap up this hour, we're still looking for 12 more pledges. Remember, this is the last hour that you can support the Kathleen Dunn Show during this drive. So make your pledge right now. You'll support this program. You'll support all your favorite programs on WPR. Plus, your pledge, this drive, enters you in a drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. You could be going to Cuba. You could be going to South Africa or the Canadian Rockies. You don't have to donate to enter. You just go to WPR.org for all the details. So your pledge at this very, very minute keeps WPR strong, and you have a chance to win a trip of your choice. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I know that many of you, since this news broke, have been asking the question, was this U.S. airstrike a war crime? And it was important to have a conversation like this. Sometimes our conversations are tough, and they should be. It's important we talk about it. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and all the hours to come possible. Choose a gift amount that's good and make your pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And for this drive, you can choose the brand new WPR water bottle as your thank you gift. That's for your pledge of $12.50 a month or $150 for the year. And you're going to love this water bottle. It has everything that you would want in a water bottle. It's stainless steel. It holds 27 ounces. And best of all, it has a WPR logo on it. But wait, there's more. You can choose from two different color combinations. So check it out at WPR.org and ask for yours when you pledge right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What about the water?
Oh, the water is the best part.
So you
fill
put
it
the water in.
You put the water in.
You put the water
in. I guess you're right. We won't be shipping them with the water.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
Better have some clarity.
Hi, I'm John Munson, encouraging you to join me on a spectacular rail tour through Canada. Make a pledge of any amount during this membership drive, and you'll be entered to win a trip for two. If you win, you'll have three trips to choose from, including a tour of beautiful sights in Canada. Look forward to scenic ferry cruises and idyllic strolls through charming towns. We'll see gardens and historic sites, and we'll explore the heart of Vancouver. Then, get away from it all for up-close views of the majestic Canadian Rockies and glacial blue lakes. Your pledge of any amount gets you entered, but no contribution is necessary to win. Find the details and the fine print at WPR.org/drawing or enter with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Best of luck.
Thank you, John. Sounds like a wonderful time. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. To make your pledge during this fall membership drive, we need 12 more pledges. And we want to go out on a note of, you know, thanks very much to all of you. And you're thanking us, and we're thanking you, and it's all good, and we're all happy. So your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever, $15, whatever,
right.
It's the right amount. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me in our studios here in Milwaukee.
Hi, and, you know, we can continue these conversations with you, with these conversations with the community that you live in, because the support we receive from members just like you. And included in all that support is more than 600 members of the WPR's 9XM Leadership Circle. 9XM members support WPR with gifts of $1,200 or more every year. That's about $100 a month. To make this leadership gift, you just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we're down. We need 10 now.
Ten
we just
more.
Need 10 calls in the next, 4 minutes, which we ought to be able to do. Mm-hmm. We hear from people all over the country and even around the world. We get pledges from Texas and Alaska and Japan and Germany because people have found something very unique here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is made possible by listener support. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll feel happy. We'll feel happy. It's a resource that's important, and it is treasured everywhere.
That's true. You know, listeners just like you make the programs here on Wisconsin Public Radio just a pleasure to listen to. But members make the programs possible. You get all of these great shows because members kick in the largest portion of WPR's budget. Become a member right now. Be part of making WPR possible with your gift of $5 a month or any amount. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And I hope you were tuned into what Lisa was saying, because that's the key here, that members kick in the single largest part of our budget. It's you. It's you who kicks it in.
Right.
So thank you.
And maybe you're saying to yourself, well, I'll just pledge next time. Well, you know what? There is no more next time to support this show.
Right.
Pledge right now. Join the community of people who come together to make this awesome, awesome radio. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Nine pledges to go now. We got another one. We just need nine in the next few minutes. You can pledge through the news. Thank you so much for all of your gifts. It's WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Thank you, Lisa, very much.
Thank you.
And thanks very much to Scotty Myers and KP Whaley for all their day in and day out terrific work.